thank you very much for inviting me. When Martin Zvonners from RFERL contacted me to invite me about 3 weeks ago, little did I, or I suspect virtually any of us, think that the subsequent events would turn out to be as dramatic and indeed historic as has come to be, and how they would garner the world's attention. It's difficult to know what to focus on given all of the developments and given the time constraints, so what I'd like to do is first offer some of my experiences as an international observer in Kyiv and Kirovohrad as an illustrative example of some of what went on, and second, just offer some thoughts on what is being dubbed the Orange or Chestnut Revolution. What we are witnessing is what Ukrainian writer Oksana Zabushko last week, writing in a Wall Street Journal, called the awakening of a nation. It's a story of courage and determination spanning generations. I returned from Kyiv last Tuesday night. It was an experience that nobody will forget. You've seen the reports of the OSCE, of which, by the way, Ukraine is a member, of Senator Lugar as President Bush's personal envoy, of ENEMO, NDI, and IRI. You've seen the numerous expressions of concern by senior U.S. officials in many other governments, international institutions, NGOs, both within and outside Ukraine, including the Ukrainian-American community, which has become particularly energized, and the international media. The International Election Observation Mission, which included OSCE along with a variety of other parliamentary assemblies of European institutions, was the first to issue detailed reports filed by nearly 600 observers who visited over 2,300 polling stations, and OSCE concluded that the elections, quote, did not meet a considerable number of OSCE standards, commitments, and Council of Europe and other European standards for democratic elections, and asserted that overall, state executive authorities and the CEC, the Central Election Commission, displayed a lack of will to conduct a genuine democratic election process, which this is in diplomatese, but I think it gets the point across. Only the CIS observers, who never met an election in the CIS they didn't like, gave these elections the thumbs up. One of my colleagues said that their conclusions might be aptly labeled as eyes wide shut. In the last week, most of the international community has spoken out. And Poland, Ukraine's probably best friend today, has been especially supportive, with Kwasniewski and Walesa visiting and trying to help resolve the issue, the impasse. The U.S. and EU have been in lockstep on the issue, and this is something that doesn't happen too much these days, all urging a review of the election results. The U.S. executive branch became increasingly more assertive, with strong statements by the White House last Wednesday and especially Secretary Powell last Thursday, in which he said that the U.S. does not consider legitimate the results of the elections in Ukraine and challenged its leaders to decide whether they're on the side of democracy or not, and talked of consequences, including hinting at further visa denials. And the White House and Secretary Powell, as well as the EU, yesterday stressed the importance of Ukraine's territorial integrity in light of some of the recent moves towards autonomy in some of the southeast provinces. Parenthetically, Congress has been calling attention to these elections for a long time, with statements by Helsinki Commission co-chairs Representative Chris Smith and Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell, dating back to nearly a year ago. Various briefings, resolutions that passed the House and Senate, and you could see all of this if you want on our website, which is www.csce.gov. The visits of Senator McCain and Lugar, the bill on sanctions, so-called Rohrabacher bill, delegations of former members who have gone over, I believe, four or five delegations. And within the last week, strong statements by the Helsinki commissioners and various senators and representatives. The bottom line is that the elections were stolen. The independent and respected Committee for Ukraine Voters asserted that at least 2.8 million ballots were rigged in favor of Yanukovych. Violations are really too numerous to enumerate. but they were extensive and they were flagrant. And what happened in Donetsk in terms of getting out the vote and the positive vote, too, for the so-called right candidate was reminiscent of the electoral zealotry of Soviet times. Perhaps it even exceeded it. My colleague from the commission, Ron McNamara, and I were in Kirovohrad, which is in the center of Ukraine, and it's on the dividing line between the northern and western oblasts, which went for Yushchenko, and the southern and eastern ones, which went for Yanukovych. On election day and night, we were in the infamous TEC, Territorial Electoral Commission 100, where problems were legion even during the first round on October 31st. Unfortunately, we weren't disappointed. While at some polling stations, the voting process was normal and orderly, at others, it was highly problematic. Pro-Yushchenko polling station commissioners had been thrown off the commissions, over 400, but many were pushing back. The local court was crowded with those dismissed seeking reinstatement. We hurried to the court where we spoke with people. This was on election day while observing. Some of them were crying. They were very emotional, who recounted their frustration and disbelief at the injustice of it all. We heard from some of them, as we did from so many others in Ukraine, we just want to live in an honest or normal or a decent country. We met with some of the judges who were reinstating these people as polling commission members, clearly displaying courage in doing so given the possible consequences. These mass expulsions contributed to an air of confusion throughout the afternoon and into the night. Some polling station chairmen were not allowing polling station commissioners back on, even after they had been reinstated. In one case, we accompanied a woman whose case my colleague Ron had heard back to her polling station, where the reception towards her was cold. And I strongly suspect the only reason they let her back on is because there were international observers present. At another polling station we observed, it had only opened up at 4:10 p.m. Mind you, it was supposed to have opened up at 8 a.m. as 8 out of 18 members of the polling station commission simply failed to show up to open the station, thus potentially disenfranchising hundreds of student voters at the technical university. The other polling station workers finally had to break into the safe in order to obtain the ballot papers and other materials so that the voters, mostly students from the technical university, could exercise their right to vote. You also saw their problems such as these suspicious hanger-ons or heads of precinct electoral commissions who didn't even know which candidate they were supposed to be representing. At the count we attended, a pro-Yushchenko observer was forced to leave right before the count commenced. I spoke with this woman, and it became clear that the reasons for her being thrown out were specious at best. Others had been thrown out earlier in the week. Despite this, the counting process seemed to go relatively smoothly, and Yushchenko emerged victorious with 1,221 votes to Yanukovych's 725, or so we thought. After our return to Kyiv the next day, we learned that the TEC had reported that in that particular precinct, it was Yanukovych who supposedly won by 1,670 to Yushchenko's 276. So this is a reversal of the count with a vengeance. At the polling station where my colleague Ron observed the count nearby in Kirovohrad and where Yushchenko won by a nearly 3-1 vote margin, there were 312 unmarked ballots missing, which meant that the results were not accepted. And this is just the tip of the iceberg and just in Kirovohrad alone. Group voting with the notorious absentee ballots organized by state-owned and some private companies was one of the major violations that significantly altered the results of these elections, nearly 5% according to OSCE, or something that's gotten less attention, but the high numbers of people who participated in so-called mobile voting, voting from homes or hospitals in certain oblasts compared to the first round. And, of course, the pressures on state employees to produce the right results or vote the right way. In the East, voter turnout in the second round increased by 9%, For example, in Donetsk Oblast, there were 96.65% turnout compared to 78% in the first round, with 96 of those 96-plus percent voting for Yanukovych. But in western Ukraine, for instance, the turnout only grew from the first to second rounds by 1.5%. So in some precincts in Donetsk, turnout reportedly exceeded 100%. This would point to ballot box stuffing, which used to be, of course, a widespread technique in communist times to also in order to reach very high voter turnout. Now, switching gears a bit, we've all seen the pictures of masses of people on the Maidan, Independence Square, and on Khreshchatyk, the main street in Kiev, gathered in support of Viktor Yushchenko, braving the freezing cold and snow. My colleague Ron and I were on the Maidan last Monday night and Tuesday morning before we left. The mood was one of determination, yet there was an element of festivity, ebullience, and optimism, which by all accounts has remained as hundreds of thousands more have poured in from all over Ukraine. Witnessing this massive expression of support for democracy was quite inspiring. There appeared to be virtually no overt police presence in the center of Kyiv. The rally was peaceful, orderly, and remarkably well organized. The organizers were appealing to the crowds to only listen to instructions from the tribunal, from them, on what and how to proceed, and not to give in to any provocations. Clearly, the opposition is trying to do everything in its power to ensure that this expression of the will of the people remains peaceful and dignified. Kyiv Mayor Omelchenko and the Kyiv City Council are supporting the protesters to help ensure their comfort, health, and safety. And there's a real network to sustain these protesters. The countless number of protesters in Kyiv and across Ukraine are in the front lines for the struggle of democracy, human rights, and human dignity. And they're all on the front lines, I think, in the struggle against any return to Ukraine's colonial past. They're struggling for freedom and, in a very real sense, true independence. Ukraine's democracy, for all its obvious flaws, is illustrated by these elections, and its civil society are probably further developed than any other in the CIS, with the possible exception of Georgia. It's no accident that the Putins and the Lukashenkos of the world are watching this election carefully. And by the way, I think the chutzpah of the Russians, when they accuse the U.S. and Europe of interfering in these elections and the subsequently, is something to behold. It's truly amazing. Just imagine the outcry, for instance, if President Bush would have visited Ukraine several times right before the elections and actively supported one of the candidates, pumping hundreds of millions into the election, or if he would have twice congratulated a candidate even before he was pronounced the official winner in Ukraine. I should add that the democratic movements of places like Belarus, Russia, and other CIS countries are also watching developments intently, as obviously which way Ukraine goes will shape Russian and CIS moves towards democracy. And for example, Belarusian Democrats were demonstrating in support in Kyiv in support of the Orange Revolution, and some who had been in Kyiv were detained and roughed up at the Ukrainian-Belarusian border when they were going back to Belarus. I think the following quote by Zbigniew Brzezinski sums the situation up perfectly in much more articulate manner than I ever can when he said, "The Ukrainian struggle for democracy is a struggle for the future of Russia. If Ukrainian democracy prevails, Russia has no choice but to go that way and be a democracy. If Ukrainian democracy fails, Russian imperial ambitions are reawakened, and there is a temptation of an alternative future, which is imperial and authoritarian." So clearly what's happening in Ukraine has important geopolitical implications. However, there are also many Russians who are very uncomfortable with their government's heavy-handed involvement in the Ukrainian elections, including some in their independent press. I don't know if some of you saw an article by, I forget the gentleman's name, in Kommersant a few days ago, for instance. But But I think that for the average Ukrainian, including many on the front lines protesting, it's not principally, if at all, about geopolitics. It's not about Russia versus the West primarily. It's about corruption versus reform, democracy versus authoritarianism, truth and trust in state institutions versus lies, a brighter future versus prolonging the status quo. It's not about the sometimes oversimplified East-West divisions in Ukraine, although these do exist. There have been few public protests on behalf of Yanukovych, and some of his supporters seem to get co-opted when they come to Kyiv. In fact, you have reports of Yushchenko and Yanukovych supporters even, engaging in friendly dialogue and then even hugging and kissing each other. Rallies in support of Yushchenko have not been limited to western and central Ukraine. They are also or have been held in cities in eastern Ukraine, including Kharkiv, for instance. Importantly, the moves by some eastern oblasts within the last few days for autonomy have been rejected even within the Yanukovych camp. And I think the starkest example of that was yesterday when Serhiy Tyhypko resigned as Yanukovych's campaign manager and National Bank chairman, and his saying that this talk of separatism is madness and must be stopped immediately. On the other hand, sadly, yesterday we also saw violence in Luhansk against pro-Yushchenko demonstrators, including an OSCE project coordinator who was present. And even though Yanukovych won resoundingly in some of the eastern oblasts and would have, probably despite the falsifications, although perhaps less resoundingly, one wonders what the results would have been if you would have had the UT1, 1+1, and InterTV and other channels reporting objectively during the electoral campaign. Thankfully, there appears to have been a dramatic shift in media reporting within the last week, although there are reports that some of these stations are being blocked out in some of the eastern oblasts. Or if you wouldn't have the use of administrative pressures, resources, and pressures and intimidation on behalf of Yanukovych. Or if you didn't have a campaign of so-called black PR, vicious lies designed to portray Yushchenko as a radical nationalist American stooge. And I have some posters that I could share with you about that a little later. Or if his illness or poisoning wouldn't have prevented him from losing valuable time campaigning. Indeed, the authorities, I think, campaign to divide and not unite represents one of the lowest of the many low points in the campaign. Countless people, from members of Ukrainian national and local governments to the military and members of the security forces, to the Ukrainian diplomats in the Ukrainian embassy here in Washington demanding that their elections reflect the will of the people, and many other Ukrainian diplomats worldwide, to the journalists, both the independent who have been courageous for a long time, and now increasingly those working for the state channels who broke state-imposed censorship, to the protesters, old and young alike, braving the cold, and to the ordinary, yet very extraordinary, remarkable women in Kirovohrad fighting for their rights. All are displaying remarkable courage and determination. They're taking risks because even though we think things are shifting in the right direction, there are no guarantees yet of how things will turn out. The historic dramatic events in Ukraine continue. Legal peaceful methods are being pursued. Following the CEC declaration of Yanukovych as the winner last Wednesday, the Supreme Court effectively banned him from being inaugurated. And in fact, today, the latest I heard was that the Supreme Court of Ukraine did pass a decision which forbids the CEC to publish the official results of the presidential elections. The newly elected president can only take office, according to this decision, no later than 30 days after the publication of the results. On Saturday, the Rada, the parliament, effectively rejected the results of the election and expressed mistrust in the CEC in connection with improper performance of its duties. Talks with the participation of both candidates, President Kuchma, European intermediaries, were held on Friday, and working groups supposedly continue to meet. Nobody can predict with certainty how things will turn out, although all indications point towards repeat voting or new elections. But there is one thing that I believe is beyond dispute, and that is that the people of Ukraine are determined to achieve their rights in a peaceful manner and to live in a democratic, free, and independent country. And that's an idea whose time has come. Thank you.